I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this very important and urgent and vital conference. I'm very happy to be in the presence of such distinguished speakers and campaigners for the right and just cause of the Palestinians and the Palestinian people. I will talk more in the second session about the present realities and the prospects for the future, and I will devote this part of my participation, in accordance to the title of the session, to a more personal view or retrospective view on my involvement in the case and cause of Palestine ever since the 1970s. I would actually like to speak about three journeys or three struggles, because each of these journeys was a struggle for something, for some ethical point in my life. And I feel more comfortable doing it because it is really the first point I want to make is that this is not about me. It's not about my own struggle. It is much more about what that kind of a struggle represents in the history of Palestine and in Israel and what it can represent for the future of the people living between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. The first journey, which is also the first struggle that I have been involved in, was a struggle against denial. The second journey, or struggle, was a struggle against fear. And the third struggle, or journey, was the one for a struggle for relevance. And I will try and explain those three journeys or struggles as much as the chairperson would allow me, gives me time to do this. The struggle against denial in Israel for me started in the late 1970s when I began my DPhil studies in Oxford in England under the supervision of two very excellent supervisors. One was the late Albert Hourani and the other one is Roger Owen, who today teaches in Harvard University in America. And under their guidance, I worked on the 1948 war as a scholar, as a young scholar trying to make his way into the academic world. And I don't think I came with much prior knowledge to that stage in my life. The things I knew or had known about 1948 were all drawn from my high school days and my early university days in Israel. Only in hindsight did I realize that there were enough clues around me, especially physical clues, that told me a very different story from the one I was told by my teachers, by my parents, by my family, by the society around me. It was through the work in the archives, but far more important, I think, through the intimate friendships I have built with Palestinian friends, that these clues have turned into the real story, and the version that I've been taught became the false story. And from the moment I realized that not only didn't I not know the true story about 1948, but I was cheated, I was being told a lie, I started my own struggle, my own sort of personal struggle against the denial in Israel. I can't say I was alone, because so many of the citizens in Israel are Palestinians, almost 20%. And of course, they did not need me for telling them what happened in 1948, nor did they need me for starting or initiating a struggle in Israel against the denial of what happened in 1948. But I think I was quite alone when I started within the Jewish community in Israel. There were, of course, groups and individuals long before me who had cried out and said that a war crime was committed in 1948. In fact, some talked, and rightly so, about crime against humanity that was committed in 1948. So there were voices in Hebrew and there were voices within the Jewish community in Israel that talked about what happened in 1948 and challenged the official version in Israel about what happened in that year. But I think that these voices came from established anti-Zionist positions. Namely, for the Israeli public at large, these kinds of opinions were expected. It wasn't surprising to hear these people or these organizations challenge the official version of Israel. I think my case, and the case of several colleagues of mine, was particular in that sense that we did not belong to any of the known anti-Zionist organizations, or we had no past history as great challengers of Zionism in the State of Israel. In fact, I was, in many ways I'm still, the only professional historian teaching in a university in Israel who was challenging the official version of 1948. I had a colleague at the time who did the same, Benny Morris, but I think you know where he stands today, so that's why I think that I was always alone in that struggle. And it was this combination of being someone who is being paid by the state and the society to tell the history, someone who is trusted as the scholar, and he comes out with a story which totally negates the official version of history, that I think was unique in my own struggle against the Nakba denial. I cannot evaluate how important or how unimportant was that particular angle. I can only define it as a particular angle because I know the map, the political map of knowledge production, if you want, in Israel. And I can locate my own writings in that map. And I can tell you, and quite confidently tell you, that among those who produce knowledge officially in Israel, those who produce knowledge as scholars, as educators, as media persons, it's very hard, unfortunately, to find people who would challenge the great lie that Israel has been telling its own people about 1948. And in fact, it was so difficult to struggle against that denial that it took me 2-3 books, actually, and I'm still at it, to try and expose the full scale about what happened in 1948. I think also the Palestinians themselves found it difficult to go back to those terrible months and years of 1948 and 49 and help us as historians to reconstruct and rebuild and reproduce the picture of what happened in 1948. It's only recently that we know about cases of rape. It's only recently that we know how many massacres actually were committed in 1948. It's only recently, I think, that we came to appreciate the scope and extent of the ethnic cleansing that had taken place in Palestine in 1948. And again, I talk mainly about the need to disseminate these views and this full historical picture in the West in general and in Israel in particular. So one particular journey that I'm still in it, I haven't reached my destination, is the journey of educating people in Israel about what happened in 1948. And in fact, in the end of this month, I feel that I'm reaching not my final destination in this journey, but I'm reaching a very important stop in that journey. The institute which I'm heading, the Emil Tuma Institute for Palestinian Studies, is going to organize the first ever right of return conference in Israel, if indeed the authorities would let us do it. We invited people from around the world, but more importantly for us, we invited the people who live in Israel, Jews, Muslims, and Christians, who believe in the right of return, in the sacredness of the right of return, to join together for the first time in one venue and express jointly their support for the cause. And it's going to be the first, I hope, of many conferences. And the major aim is to have a roof organization inside Israel that would not allow people to forget what happened in 1948, would not allow people to misunderstand and misconceive the importance and significance of the 1948 events for a future solution for the Palestine question. I also want to mention a second struggle in which, or journey in which I am involved, and that's the struggle against fear. The particular fear I'm referring to in my own society is what I would call Islamophobia, the demonizing of Islam as a religion, as a culture, and as civilization. A lot of energy is invested in Israel to demonize Islam. In fact, it turned out that it's not that easy to convince even Israeli Jews, even Zionist Jews, about the Palestinian people as a national movement. As the years went by, it was very difficult to convince the average Israeli Jew that the occupation of Palestine is justified, that closures, collective punishment, demolition of houses are really justified in the name of any cause. The only way you could maintain wide public support for the kind of cruel and callous policies which are being implemented on the ground in the occupied territories was by demonizing the other as an enemy that is so feared, is so frightening that any means would be justified in the struggle against its menace and its threat to the survival of the Jewish state. And it took time, I think, for those who are in charge of strategies and policies in Israel to realize that demonizing Islam can be very nicely linked into similar emotions and prejudices elsewhere in the West, and serve not only the domestic struggle for public opinion in Israel, but also enhance Israel's position within certain significant circles of public opinion, especially in America and elsewhere. And here too, I was trying to do something for which I had only the support of my Muslim friends and my Christian friends among the Palestinian people. It was very difficult to find colleagues and partners among the Jewish community in Israel. It was even more difficult to find support from the very large Orientalist community in Israel, who are, to my mind, the villains in this story, because they support the academic scaffolding for the prejudiced and distorted picture of Islam and Muslims that feeds the Israeli fears from Muslims and Islam. And I wrote several books. One of them was entitled Islam and Peace, in which I tried to show the varieties of the Islamic experiences and histories and cultures, and in which I stress the need of a colonizing people like the Jewish people who came to Palestine in the late 19th century to strive and understand that if they want to be part of the Middle East, they will be part of an Islamic civilization. And if they want to be not alienated by the area and not alienating the area, they will have to change their best basic attitudes towards Islam as a religion, as a culture, and as civilization. And they cannot rely on the knowledge which is provided to them by the scholarly community in Israel and by certain circles in the scholarly community in the United States. This is another struggle or journey that has not ended. In fact, the last 4 years have made it even more difficult because of the uprising, the second uprising, the events in America and elsewhere. It's even more difficult to persuade people about the need to know, to understand, and to reconcile, rather than nourish fears, prejudices, and hatred as a way of life. But I am hopeful that as an educator, if I won't be, me and my friends, if we won't be successful with this generation, we may have a better chance with the second generation, with the next generation. Sorry. And the last journey of which I want to talk, and with this conclude, is my own journey for relevance. It's very difficult to be relevant in a society which upholds ideologies and perceptions of reality which totally contradict your own. In fact, the right thing to do, logically, is to leave such a society, not to be part of it. And many times in my academic and public life, I have played with the idea of leaving Israel, and actually by that, almost serving to the best the anti-Zionist ideology in which I believe. However, when you are involved in public struggles, there are small victories, although you may feel that you are being defeated in the, on the macro level, there are micro victories or micro successes. And they are on a very individual basis. You do not change the textbooks of Israel, you don't alter the Israeli policies, and I doubt it whether I have any impact on the Israeli media's representation of the reality in the past and in the present. But I have students and I have colleagues among the Jewish community in Israel which are beginning to see things differently. And even just for their case and cause, I feel I should stay and go on. And I also have many, many friends and colleagues among the Palestinians in Israel and among the Palestinians under occupation and definitely among the Palestinians in the various diasporas and exiles. And I think that also for their sake, such journeys, and hopefully there will be many more journeys like that, are one drop, a few drops, in a sea that eventually would be the sea of life for everyone who lives in Israel and Palestine. And in order to keep on such struggle, I call it, what is needed is the need to remain relevant. Because I don't know how many of you understand fully the way the Israeli political system works. Sometimes it would have been easier to struggle against it had it been a full dictatorship. It would have been easier had it been practicing against Jews the same policies it practices against Arabs, Muslims, and Christians. But it doesn't. It doesn't. It practices a very favorable policies towards anyone who is a Jew, even an anti-Zionist Jew. Every now and then, there are exceptions to that rule. But basically, the rule is that because you belong to the right ethnic or religious group, you would be treated differently. In fact, in such a way that can even defeat the most efficient struggle of Jews from within. The main means with which the society or those the powers that be in the society struggle against people like myself is by turning us into irrelevant figures in our own communities. Not by imprisoning us, this is reserved for the Palestinians, not by torturing us. Every now and then they try to stop me from traveling, but that's not the real hardship. No, the point is to try and stop you from having access to your own people. Which, and with this I would end, which gives me hope on two accounts. The first is that they know that if people like myself would have access to as many people as possible among the Jewish community in Israel, we may have our way. We may impact people if we tell them exactly what happened in 1948, if we break the wall of denial of what happens now in the occupied territories, if we allow them as Jews to see how un-Jewish is Israel, how the state has had acted and is acting in a way that contradicts any Jewish ethics and any significant chapter in Jewish history. That's the first point. And the second point is that I think that the powers that be in Israel understand that time is running out. That in this time of in age, the beginning of the 21st century, even people in America cannot be deceived anymore for too long about what is being done in their name against other people. And the only way to try and stop them from knowing is to try and prevent ambassadors like myself from coming from there and telling them, with all the legitimacy that a nice Jewish boy can get in America, what exactly happens on the ground. And I think that this is going to be a very tough struggle to try and get the message, because so many people who are not part of the old coalition against Zionism and occupation and colonization have joined the struggle for whatever reason, from a humanist reason, a religious reason, or a spiritual reason, or ethical one. So many new members are in that coalition for justice that I think eventually we would carry the day if we continue to do conferences like this and not being dispersed, whether there are many or few of us attending here, and make sure that if they don't allow us to speak in one place, we speak in another. And if they don't allow us to speak today, then we can speak tomorrow. And I think that when such knowledge would be shared by many more Jews than is shared today, I would feel that my personal journey has come to an end. Thank you.